Hello and welcome to the Personnel Today Friday podcast. I'm Tara Craig and I'm joined by John Charlton. Coming up, we look at the latest unemployment figures, in particular the impact on the young. We hear about a Court of Appeal ruling on status of Jupiler in pre-pack administration sales. And we hear how the French hotel chain Accor is depersonalising CVs. But first, the news. A law student with a prosthetic arm who did not fit the look of clothes store Abercrombie & Fitch has been awarded £9,000 in compensation. A tribunal yesterday ruled that Riam Dean was unlawfully harassed over her disability and subsequently dismissed without good reason. It awarded her a total of £9,014, including £136 in damages, £7,800 for injury to her feelings, and £1,077 for loss of earnings. Dean said that she was banned from the floor of the clothing retailer's flagship London store and banished to the stockroom. The Financial Services Authority has banned bonuses that are guaranteed for more than a year, as part of new rules determining how banks should pay and reward staff. They said that senior employees should have their bonuses spread over 3 years to discourage short-term risk-taking. Hector Sykes, chief executive of the regulator, said that they were determined that banks' remuneration policies should be consistent with and promote effective risk management. Just 5% of employees recognise HR as being fundamental to business survival, a survey has revealed. Research conducted by the European Leadership Programme also found that more than a quarter of employees felt HR expertise was the least important skill for the chief executive to possess when leading the organisation through the tough economic climate. But the survey of 1,000 UK-based executives also showed that 42% believed the chief executives needed more HR support. Keep an eye on personneltoday.com for updates on these and other stories affecting the HR community, or go to our online forum, HR Space, to add your own thoughts. The government's latest unemployment figures announced this week showed that unemployment has risen to 2.38 million in the 3 months to May. That's a record increase of 281,000 people out of work. The labour market statistics also revealed that unemployment for 18 to 24-year-olds reached 726,000 in the 3 months to May. That's up by 95,000. And this looks set to rise further as students leave universities and schools this summer. Research released by PricewaterhouseCoopers this week shows that 43% of 18 to 34-year-olds believe that not enough is being done by the government or by the schools, the universities or employers to help new graduates get their first job. Almost 67% of those surveyed blame a lack of government funding for the poor prospects for graduates in the recession. I spoke to several industry figures this week to ask them whose responsibility it was, what companies should be doing to help with youth unemployment.
What did they have to say?
They were all quite keen to emphasise that their companies are continuing to recruit the young. They are very much looking at a long-term picture, and they acknowledge that there's a massive amount of applications for them to wade through. Now, Sonia Stockton, who's head of recruitment at PwC, told me that they've dealt with 12,000 applications this year, but they have put in place a very stringent selection process aiming to identify the right skills. Stockton also told me that they need the communities they work in to be stable and healthy. It's not just about the people they actually recruit for their own company. So they have a community employability and education program, and they've expanded that to focus on bits of London and Manchester, for example, that have been especially hard hit by the recession.
Is she saying that they're making a special effort to recruit from what we might call deprived areas?
I don't think they've put anything particular into place. I mean, she says that solving youth unemployment shouldn't be the responsibility of employers alone, but they have an ongoing strategy of focusing on employability and education. They are opening new opportunities. They're looking at helping students to develop skills at an earlier stage to make them more employable. They have a summer academy for first-year undergraduates. They have an online employability skills clinic. They run seminars and they organise career showcases in schools. Other people I've spoken to include Samantha Weston, who's head of resourcing at accountancy firm Grant Thornton. Now, she said that they don't just recruit graduates. Every year, about 30 of their trainees come straight from school. They are working towards helping the young unemployed by offering internships and summer work experience programs. And she told me that the interns are part of the pipeline for their graduate intake for 2010. And ultimately, there's succession planning for managers of the future. So they're very committed to the younger workforce. Weston also said that At Grant Thornton, they don't want to fall into the trap of the last recession. They don't want to be left with a dearth of candidates for management positions in a few years' time. And she said at the moment they're very committed to those entering the job market. Jack Markiewicz, talent lead at the PPMA, which of course is the Public Sector People Managers Association, was keen to point out that it's not just up to employers. And he said that young people should really be looking into voluntary opportunities to get themselves known and to gain new skills. And he has suggested that they contact their local Citizens Advice Bureau or check out local voluntary opportunities on the web. There's plenty more in that story online, so please take a look at personneltoday.com. John, you're going to talk us through a Court of Appeal ruling to do with 2P.
This relates to a Court of Appeal ruling in the case of Oakland v Wellswood brackets, Yorkshire close brackets, Limited. This was an EAT decision towards the end of last year, which involved a so-called pre-pack administration case. A pre-pack administration is where the administrators or the liquidators have an agreement beforehand with the owners of the company in difficulties that its assets will be sold to another company. So this is all sorted out beforehand.
John, can you tell me a little bit about the original case, please?
Yes, as I said, this goes back to last year and involved as far as I can recall, a fruit and veg wholesaler called Oldco, food wholesale business. Now, Oakland was a director, shareholder and employee of said business, and it ran into financial difficulties, and it was sold to a new company through a pre-pack administration sale. The new company was called Wellswood. Now, just to complicate matters, at the Employment Appeal Tribunal, Wellswood was referred to as Newco. Anyway, Wellswood was the new company which took on the assets of food wholesale business Oldco. Now, Oakland transferred to Wellswood, referred to at the Employment Appeal Tribunal as Newco. So he joined that new company and subsequently left. Now, he claimed that when he joined Newco, Wellswood, his salary fell and his terms and conditions didn't transfer. So he argued that his terms and conditions should have transferred under TUPE. Now, the Employment Appeal Tribunal ruled that TUPE did not apply in that case, in the case of a pre-pack administration sale. Oakland took this case to the Court of Appeal, which has decided, and this judgment was made public this week, that TUPE will now apply if an insolvent business is sold through a pre-pack administration, which means that the purchaser will then have to take on board the terms and conditions of staff who transfer under a pre-pack administration arrangement.
So what was their justification for changing their minds on this ruling?
Well, it's an interpretation of the Employment Rights Act 1996. So they've decided that means that continuous service calculations apply in this case. We spoke to Mark Taylor, an employment partner at law firm Jones Day, who said that the original EAT decision led to considerable uncertainty, whereas the sale out of pre-pack administration, as it seemed to give employees the opportunity to leave employees behind in circumstances where the government clearly intended TUPE to apply. However, Taylor said that the Court of Appeal decision does nothing to improve this situation, as it focuses on a point not argued in the EAT relating to continuous service calculations under the Employment Rights Act 1996. So Taylor's saying that despite the Court of Appeal ruling, there's still a lot of uncertainty around the status of employees who transfer to a new employer through a pre-pack administration sale. So he says that the situation is still unsatisfactory and needs to be resolved. So it could only be resolved really through a further decision by the courts or by legislation through Parliament. So we seem to be a little further forward.
And do we expect to see more of these cases coming up now?
Well, because of the recession, of course, a lot of companies have struggled, have gone into administration. There's been a rise in pre-pack sales, so it could well be that there are more cases in the pipeline of employees who have transferred through a pre-pack and are on worse terms and conditions than they were previously. So we shall see.
Thank you, John. Tell me a bit about this Accor CV issue that's come up this week.
Yeah, Accor is a pretty large French hotel chain. And it has decided that it wants anonymous job applications. And it's decided to depersonalise the application process by removing applicants' first and last names, nationality, sex, age, and email address. So when applications go before managers, whoever's deciding who to call for interview, they won't have these details in front of them. So they'll have details of education, experience, and so on. But the idea is to, I suppose, remove as much personal discrimination, if you will, from the recruitment process possible.
Apart from a boom in the sales of Tipex in France, what do we expect to see from this? Do you think it's going to work? Is it a good idea?
Well, it's one of those things, because we had Lynn Featherstone, Lib Dem MP, calling for this to, I think, made compulsory in this country. So it's something that's bubbling under here. Will it make any difference? Well, I think it could well do. It's quite an interesting development, and one that hopefully we can follow more closely.
Okay, so keep an eye on personnelltoday.com to see how that story develops, and indeed whether it develops in the UK. Well, that's it from this week's podcast. Thanks for listening. Remember to go online to check the latest news and views in the HR community at hrspace.co.uk. That's hrspace.co.uk. Until next week, goodbye.